I offer my most humble pronouns to our beloved Lord, Sri Sathya Sai Baba and Swami. Thank you for having me here. Join all my brothers and sisters. And thank you for the invitation, for being with you. And I wish to say my greetings. Dear embodiments of love, Sai Ram. I like how we've did the Ladies' Day presentation, because I know amongst us there's a lot of us guys who have been drug off to see Swami by our ears or by our nose, by our wives. I'm one of them. Embodiments of love. It's interesting that it was only a couple years ago that I had the courage, I would say, to say embodiments of love. Because it came very clear to me that we generally call each other devotees. But I've been around Swami enough that if someone will say, oh, that devotee, and he would interrupt him and say, how do you know who's a devotee? I don't know that. But I do know we're all embodiments of love. For the simple reason that Swami says that over and over and over and over again. In all his discourses, right from the beginning, once, twice, three times, he will say, premas rarupalas, embodiments of love. That's his message. Coming to Prasanthi, and then on Ladies' Day, it was really interesting that we had that. That brought back a fond memory of the first Ladies' Day when the men were really put out of shape because we weren't even allowed to be in the Poonacharli. Finally, when we could come in, we had to sit all in the corners in the whole bit, and we were really kind of, we didn't like that, to be honest with you, on the first Ladies' Day. But then it was opening our hearts to understand. And my wife has one quick story, which is wonderful to share, because on that particular day, Swami gave away a number of cows to the villagers, and each one was brought to the back of the Poonachandra, and we could watch him at that time, and he'd pet the cow and give it away to each villager. And in so doing, the cows, some of them did their thing, and splashes would come all over his robes, and he was kind of a mess. Well, my wife was on the inside with the ladies waiting for Swami, and we could see that. And she shared with me later that it was amazing. When Swami walked into the stage, all he did was, and his robes were in perfect shape again, and all he did was just do like that, and it was a brand new clean robe. So she reminds her of that first Ladies' Day. It was a very exciting time for all of us, and obviously for the ladies especially. The theme is wonderful. I asked several people the theme. It's a very simple theme. It's a theme of love. And interesting enough, I, for years, all of a sudden was not asked to speak, and I didn't mind. I understand everything's meant to be. I had my role to play. But when I went to that particular center in Encinitas 2 years ago or thereabouts, I had the urge to say embodiments in love. And I also had the urge to tell the story about Charles and Faith Penn. Maybe some of you might know them and maybe you don't. They were actually the first known devotees. Certainly there were a lot here, but they were the first ones that came. Charles was from Australia, but he'd moved here and married Faith Penn. And so they were, and Swami, we have letters at the book center that Swami would write to them about the formation of the center, and kind of all through the same things that he told Hislop and everybody was in Charles' records, which was really beautiful because they would write back and forth, and a lot of letters from Swami. But I was very disturbed with Charles and Faith, because when I finally became part of the Sai organization in 1975, we'd invite them to our local retreats, and I was very disturbed, because all they would do is talk about love. And I thought, my goodness, that's a boring subject. let's get to work and shape up all these centers the way they're supposed to be. Okay? Anyway, so now we're going to go back a little bit before that on the lady's role in dragging us guys to see Swami. It was through my wife started studying yoga, Hatha yoga, a couple years, and we lived in a small city called Monrovia, suburb of Los Angeles at that time, and she became involved in Hatha yoga, which was wonderful. She liked it, and she went to one teacher, and then another teacher told her about Indra Devi, which was another instrument in bringing a lot of people to Swami. So she went to Takati a couple times and talked about, and there she found out that half the time was Hatha Yoga, and the other half the time was Indra Devi talking about Sai Baba and showing old movies and things like that that Richard and Janet Bach had taken. So she'd come home the first time, she said, oh, I'm all excited about going to India to see Sathya Sai Baba, and I'm like that. And a year later, she went again, and this time she came home and said, I'm going to go to India to see Sai Baba, and I really went like that. And that was in 1973, end of summer of 73. Nothing was said until I had a personal experience with Swami in December of 73. And Barbara all of a sudden said, I'm going to India, whether you go for sure or not. So I guess I'm going to India, but my plan was different than hers. I was going to drop her off at Puttaparthi and just say, okay, everything's safe, and I'll do a little traveling around India. And we got to Bangalore, and we traveled with a group of Indra Devi. It was about 30 or 40 of us, and by the time we got to Puttaparthi, at that time, it was a very long way, and at nighttime, we got there in the evening, and it cab drivers wouldn't go back, so I had to stay overnight. I didn't even check out of the hotel. I left my luggage there. What so happens that the next day, Swami called our group in, and he spoke to our group, and Professor Kasturi was the translator, so it was very... But I don't remember what he said on that, but he did answer three questions that I had burning in my heart when I was very young, but I forgot about them. But anyway, those questions were answered, so when I walked out, I found Barbara and I said, he is God, I am staying. So I did. I didn't leave, and we had two beautiful 2 weeks in Puttaparthi at that time. Now, I did hear, before coming over, Barbara brought home she gave me a book, and I didn't pay attention, and near the nightstand, and a picture, and I didn't pay attention. But she also brought home a record, which Dick and Janet Box had made. They were very important at that time, making movies about Swami. There's old movies. I still like watching them because they would flick and flack and all that stuff. Not like today's videos. But I didn't pay attention to the movies or because we didn't have any. But that one CD, one record I did play. It was one of the old ones. The kids today wouldn't even know they were existing. One of the big old ones. And on one side was a discourse of Swami where Kasturi talked. And the other side is where he sang the beautiful bhajans. And part of that was done by Lightstorm, a group of two groups that went to live with Swami during the Vietnam years. All this builds up to that discourse, to this day, in my view, is still probably one of the most, if not the most important one, especially for newcomers. Are there any newcomers here in this group? If there are, a hearty welcome to you. Especially like to hear of newcomers that come, because we were all newcomers at one time. And they're a very important part of the growth of the Sai organization. But that particular discourse said the following, and it's a reminder that we should remind ourselves. What did he say? He said, in the past, avatars have come, and all the teachers and all the saints, is to destroy the evil and protect the righteous. But he said, in this particular avatar, quote, all are tainted. And if I were to do that, we're all gone. What does he come for? Transformation. Now, I misunderstood transformation for a while. By that, you know, it's to get us to be good and do all those things. But really, I've come to learn that the real deal of transformation is the following. And that is simply to help us find out who we truly are, because we are the embodiments of love. We are love. Quote, very simple quote. I love quoting Swami because nobody can argue those words. You can try all you want, but you aren't going to win because he speaks the truth. We are embodiments of love. So what is the transformation that he's talking about? Just that, to remind us who we really are. Love. God is love, live in love. God is love, live in love. Quote, Sri Satya Sai Baba, another safe one. So where did my path start with that? When I arrived in Puttaparthi for the first time, we were fortunate to have an interview. The second day we're there, whatever that, we didn't know what they were, but he called us in and we were standing up. And he said, you're unhappy. And boy, I said to myself, God, even God doesn't know how unhappy I am. He says, but don't worry. He was doing like that. My wife reminded me, he was just patting my heart, patting my heart. He says, you're very dissatisfied with work. And I said, yeah, right, I know, and here, that will. And so I got all excited. He said, that will change. So I was really, when I got home, I'm sure everything's going to be fine, the work's going to go change, everything's going to be perfect, which it was, but I didn't know how it was going to become perfect. I had yet to learn that. You know, he's the Chitta Chora. He catches our heart, and when we fall in love with him, then he begins the wonderful game and joy, and I use that word, of transformation, because once we realize that that's what he's doing, it's really wonderful. What is he doing to all of our hearts? And I encourage you, as I'm sharing my experiences, it's the best I can do is share experiences. And I'm hoping that you will dive into your individual experiences, because there's a guarantee. None of you would be here in this center or have gone to Puttaparthi or what else unless you were called. So if we're called and we understand that, we should take a moment to reflect what Swami says and our own personal experiences. That's what I liked in this particular Lady Days, how important it is in that message, that to dive into your experiences, because each one here has them with our Swami. So as I'm talking about mine, hopefully it will bring to light something that has opened your heart, because that's what it's all about. Now, when I first, and I mentioned the pens for a moment, but when I first was Swami, in his opening words too, when he said that would change, and then he said three things. And that's about it. Then he talked about our children and, you know, let us know that he knew about everything. That was interesting. But then he said that these few words to me. He said, duty without love is deplorable. Duty with love is desirable. Love without duty is divine. But I didn't catch on at that time. But looking back, that was the opening of my path with Swami for 35 years and continuing. And it's once you get it, at that time I didn't get it, nor did I get it for quite a while, because my ego needed to be busted. So in 1975 was the first organization in the United States, and Dr. Hyslop was appointed, as you know, the first organizer, official organizer in the United States. And I happened to be appointed one of the members of the council at that time, and there was only two regions, East Coast and West Coast. But as I said, I didn't want to hear about this word love. I'm going to go back and get these things going with all that duty. Obviously no love. So slowly Swami begins to make that transformation of digging into my heart. And I'm very fortunate, very, very fortunate that we were able to go back to India all the time. And each trip I would go, I would toss and turn and couldn't sleep and couldn't add. And my wife would just be enjoying. But each time there was a message that Swami would give me to learn. And it was a very simple understanding. When I first arrived, he would hardly give a greeting. Then if I got the message, whatever it was, he would come up to me and he'd say, "Oh, when did you arrive?" Then I knew I had an understanding. So every trip, believe it or not, there was a depth of understanding of diving in to purifying the heart, which is pure anyway, to get to the point of be a loving soul. Am I fully there? I don't think so. I'll let him decide that. You know, we go to Puja party, and I don't think the saints and sages have to go. Let me just stop right there. We're all chosen to go at the right time, and because we're ready to accept his message of transformation. And the word transformation at the surface, at first I thought it was, and practiced it for so long time. I'm glad I did, because I would dive into a particular teaching which I had to work on. But later on, and just recently, I got the message of transformation is just opening the heart to be who you are, an embodiment of love. And I trust and believe me, I believe this very wholeheartedly right now, because I asked a couple people what I should talk about, and then the message up here was love. And recently in the United States, the regions have the title of love. Interesting that all of a sudden, this word love is becoming predominant. Always has with Swami, but for us, it's been very difficult. It's very difficult to say openly, "I love you," because true openly of "I love you" is truth. I can honestly say "I love you all" now. It's because I've gone beyond that sense nonsense of what the word love in a worldly sense means. Because true love, there is nothing else but love. Quote, God is love. What does he tell us? Over and over again, live in love. So, interesting that my path was one by one. And what I chose to do, I was very fortunate about that, that I had the grace to understand that if a particular fault I would find in my heart, and the fault is nothing more that something in your heart has closed you against something. You've had a something out there that really it's your heart that's closed. And what do we tend to do? Oh, it's that guy's fault. It's this fault. It's the wife's fault. It's the children's fault. It's that political party's fault. Or whatever. Swami teaches us reflection, reaction, and resound. Which simply means that if we see something out there that we don't particularly are unhappy about, the finger should come back. There's something here that reflection is not pure in your heart. And if you concentrate on it, very simply, you will find what it is. And when you find what it is, that takes us to the message of, which all the masters have said, Jesus and everybody, they all say, love thy neighbor and all of that. And they all said, in one way or another, take one step towards me, and God will take 100 towards you. Take one step towards me, and God will take 100 towards you. But what is that one step? It's the first concept of it. It's not too easy to grasp. But when you grasp it, is what you do. Is when you identified something that's happening in the world, and I mean everything, that you don't like. Anything. That means that's the grasp of something that you must say toward our beloved Swami. What is this particular fault or whatever you want to call it that I need to work on? And if you say that and you concentrate on it, then his 100 steps will take you beyond that fault. Or whatever it's called. The fault is a correction that needs to be done within us. And then you see that your reaction, it's reflection. What is it that you see? The reaction is, how do you react towards that? Do you want to argue? You want to say it's the other person's fault. You understand all this. And then the resound is more quiet. It comes to the judgmental in the head. Now, if you look back in Swami's teachings and all his discourses, there's a tendency that he talks about things. Now, reaction, resound, reflection, reaction, resound is nothing new. It's there. It's been written. It's all over. And he says it in certain ways. And I see a little seriousness out there, and I guess that's okay, but I don't want you to be serious, because following the path of reaction, of reflection, reaction, resound becomes, once you take the step, once you go through the first couple times of understanding that you have to work on something, you begin to laugh, and you begin to smile, and you begin to understand love. Now, I'm smiling now, because I'm laughing at myself. Because when I first got into the Psy organization, I was Mr. Serious, and in the world, Mr. Serious, because everything has to be solved in the world, because that's the man's deal. You know, it's our duty to shape everybody up. I don't think so. It's our duty to do everything in love. And eventually you begin to just practice love. The simplicity of it, and that's what's so neat about the Psy organization, we're really able to put the practice of love in practice. But the real practice and the real doing of love is when you wake up in the morning and you smile. And wherever you are at that given moment, you just be love all day long. And being love is nothing more than accepting what is as is. And then on this path came along, after many experiences, these three books, which have now become written by John Goldwith. And John is a very humble person. We've had him speak at our public meeting. We have one every month sponsored by the Book Center. And he's very humble and very quiet. And he authored these three books. And the first one is Purifying the Heart. And the second one is a little booklet, Practice Purifying the Heart, which is all Swami's quotes. Within the first one, he quotes Swami. And the third one is another, a little different title, I don't remember it, because it really comes later after you've gotten through the first two. Now, like it or not, every one of us here is doing this. Some knowingly with Swami, and some unknowingly with Swami. But his transformation is continual. And it's not only in the Psy organization, it's in the whole world, in his Sankalpa. I like it because I've been fortunate enough to become aware of it, which has given me a lot of time at Prasanthinilya. To say it was easy all the time, and looking back, yes, it was, but at the particular moment, I wasn't so sure in the few things that I had to learn. And love is not so much how grandiose we want to make things, is how we do it. It's the quality in what we do. And that becomes, once you get this wonderful feeling inside, that maybe I am the embodiment of love, and maybe living it is not such a bad idea. And when you get to that point, all of a sudden, I can say this truthfully now. As you know, all the masters, Swami, Jesus, Buddha, Allah, all of them, saints and sages, say, you want the world to change, change yourself first. Because changing the outside is one-to-one. Because, and this is experience talking, when you really get into that mood of practicing it, all of a sudden, you're surrounded by the same people, by the same thing, but everything looks pretty good again. And so who has changed? It's my attitude towards those same people who are going through their lifestyle in their way to God. And then it becomes joyful. Very joyful path of accepting Swami's embodiment of love of which we are. And it becomes lots of joy. And I like to share it that way and encourage it, because it's still difficult. It's very interesting to note that saying embodiment of love, the first time I said it, and it was a center down in Encinitas, there, a small center near San Diego, The president later said, you know, I started saying that at the other meetings. And he said, but I got a lot of heat and I had to stop because everybody said only Swami could say that, embodiments of love. Now, that's pretty naive, but that tells us where we're at. Swami's it, and I'm not it. That's not his message. How often does he say, I am God, you are God, only you don't know it. So the path is opening our heart, because that's who we are. We're all marching home together as lotus feet. And as we're doing it, it's much more joyful in the world. Sure, we're going through a mess right now. But what does he say? What does he tell us? Open your heart to the fact that whatever is happening is good for you. You've heard that over and over again. Say it when you have a problem. Okay, Swami, this is good for me. What do I have to learn? Okay, Swami, it's not easy. But once you get into it and you see the results, it is easy. And I'm up here, you know, and to say that, and we've been through our ups and downs in my family. And my wife and I have chosen another prayer because we all have our ups and downs. And during this birthday season of Swami, we're really, he doesn't, you know, he always says that my birthday's a non-existent, all that. It's an opportunity to honor him on his birthday by taking a moment for reflection, reaction, and resound in our lives. As I mentioned, that we've had our turmoils in a family. Who hasn't? It's part of the world. But my wife and I have chosen a mantra that we use as a prayer. Rather than praying for a solution, you know, we pray for the highest good for all involved. Now, that takes away the desire of the solution. Now, the first time you get into it, that's a little bit of a challenge because we say, I want things a certain way. But once you get into saying that, you'll be totally amazed that the solution will be there for everyone who accepts it. That's the grace of our beloved Lord. It is just amazing. It is just amazing. You practice that. Pray us for the highest good of all concerned. It's basically a very simple message of sharing love. Because everything is love. What do we say when we go to Puja party and you go for the first time and you meet a stranger that's not in the Sai world and we've gone, you know, in our world, we're from the Western and we've grown up and in the schools and we still have friends that we went to high school and then that age, all of us got married at a young age and they're still married. It's an unusual situation that our friends have been married for 50 years. So all of them, even today, the question, what are you doing in India? You know, what's the question when you come back? Well, what it's like over there? My father-in-law, stepfather-in-law, still asked that question. And what do we say? We all said, well, we see Satya Sai Baba, what it's like. Well, we always say, oh, he's just so full of love. He's just so full of love. Now, to describe it beyond that is impossible. There's nowhere you can go with that because that's exactly why we keep going back. We were drawn by his love. And he wants us to share that love. So that's how we do it. We don't try to explain him. We don't try to do anything else because it's not. Then you said, my father-in-law, this has been 50-some years, every time we come back, he says, what do you do over there? Well, we go to darshan. And it's all his love. And then we go to lunch. And then we take a nap. And then we go to make these looks. Even today. He looks and he looks. Well, okay, you just keep saying it with love. And all of a sudden now, he'll say after years, he was very upset that we were going. So is Barbara's mother. She's passed on. And but now he says, have a good trip. And he'll say, say hello to Sai for me. This is really true. He said this the last two times, and I'm smiling. Because it's my reflection. I don't become protective. I see that in him now. So he's given it, I'm getting it back what I see. Before when I would say, well, why doesn't he understand? You know, inside. Why doesn't he understand? Why is he questioning me that? Now I've given that up, and I can truly love him through who he is where I get it back again. It's amazing. And I had to work on that because he, father-in-law and me, had our differences. I was living my life with the family, which he didn't approve of, and it was very obvious. It was obvious to him and obvious to me, so we were rubbing sandpaper all these years. We'd get together, and he'd say something, and I'd say something. We always had good manners, but there was something there. Finally, yes, it's a good laugh. Obviously, you know that, huh? Somewhere along the line, now you're laughing, because that's exactly what reflection reaction is. Once you catch on to it, it becomes humorous, because you're laughing at yourself. I liked it. You see, you're laughing because you're all reflecting on the time, aren't you? Of course you are. And once the change happens, you go back again and say, it's the same father-in-law, but I'm loving him the way he is, unconditionally. That's divine love. And I can do that and say that. Oh, sometimes there's a little something, but nothing like it was. And I'll just shake it off and tell him, just, hey, I love you, and we can go on to the next subject. But can you imagine that? Did he change? No, he still wonders why we go there. But he says, have a good trip and say hello to Sai for me. He didn't change. Maybe he did. It doesn't really matter. The point is my heart opened towards that block, you see? I was blocked. Something he was doing was my reflection of putting a cover over my heart, not loving him. I chose not to love him at that moment. And when I began to open my heart, that's gone. But in this process, there's a few others that come along. I was noticing, just as the children arrived at Balvikas, and I was looking at the window, and there was a new one. It's only been there a short time. One of the seniors told me that. And I could see them just playing around together, jumping, playing around. And, you know, you go back, and we all know this. The children that first come in the world, I mean, you put them in a room with no matter who, where they're from, they play, they jump. They're unprejudiced, but we teach them prejudice. You know that. You see them. We were in Germany once on a business trip, and in Munich, there a big open plaza playground. I remember this so distinctly because my wife and I and our kids were small. So they all wanted to play. So there they are, jumping and sliding and doing, and the Germans spoke German. They spoke English. They're chattering away, smiling and laughing, jumping and playing and hugging and doing all that they do because nobody said to them that they're any better than anybody else. Nobody told them. So they weren't. So as children grow up, we know where those prejudices come from where we live and all, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. We don't want to go that way because we're going the other way now. We are learning from Swami how to love, how to love. It's a simple message all of a sudden because I firmly believe, no, I'll go beyond that. I know his expectations now because we've heard him over and over again say, and you have too, in the discourses he'll say, I'm never going to talk again because you're not practicing my teachings. And he threatens the students quite often. I'm not going to talk to you anymore. You're not practicing my teachings. And I will share this moment in Kota Canal. A little bit more time. In Kota Canal, we've been privileged to be summer course in Kota Canal with Swami. And at every point, at everywhere we go, there was a lesson. And we were able to be in the house all day for almost 2 weeks. We could go in the house in the morning and wait for Swami to come down from breakfast. And Barbara was the only lady allowed in the house with the students, unless there were other guests in the evening. So she was always doing a dance, didn't know where to stand. And Swami teased her, you're doing a dance. And she was, because she was always trying to be away from wherever the boys were and things like that. But one day in the morning, he would peek out the window in his home at the people gathering for darshan. And he was very serious. And we were close enough, and so we know enough that you're near Swami. The message is for you too. It's not just for over there. That's the reflection that you understand. If Swami says something, even though he's not talking to you, but you're in the vicinity, believe me, it's for you too. And he said, look at them, look at them. They come to see me, but none of them are practicing my teachings. quote. It's a good remembrance. And then one time, too, Barbara doing her dance, and Swami was preparing to go to darshan, and she said to Swami, "Swami, should I go outside and get in line for darshan?" And he turned at her and started laughing and laughing and laughing. "This is your darshan. You're standing right here." That's what we do around Swami. We get a little confused, don't we? It's pretty easy because we want to do what we think is the right thing. And he's so loving. Now, another point of reaction, and if you look back, and again, it's you probably, but I've learned that his discourses follow a pattern because he's teaching us all, knowingly and unknowingly in our heart, that for a while he was, as you know, he would encourage us and say, you know, your reaction is bad and you say an ill word, that carries out for a long time the damage it will cause. And then he started talking about, okay, maybe you're controlling the tongue. What about the mind? Then he started on that one because that's part of reflection, reaction, and resound. Once you start getting to go, there's three phases in it that we all go through in this transformation. The first phase is you begin to see the things you don't like in people. And Swami says there's always more good in the world than bad. So he's always encouraging us to turn that around and see the good in people because there's always more good in everyone than bad somewhere. And once you get into that and begin to practice that, then you're getting into the final phase of seeing God in everyone, and that's where we all want to be. But that's the process that we're going through with those three words, knowingly and unknowingly, using those words or not, reflection, reaction, and resound. Now, the judgmental one is difficult for me, and I think it's probably more difficult for everybody. So I'll give you a couple stories on this, because I dove into this practice. I really did. I asked Swami for the guidance in relationship to, okay, once I caught on, let's purify. Let's do what I can. And he's guided me that way, and I thank him for it. And I thank him for his understanding, the grace that he gave me that ability. I feel very comfortable sharing it now because I know in my heart that this is a big opportunity. The raising of consciousness in his last few years, this avatar we're here is just going like that. And one of the things that came to mind was during this process, I used the word process, I was listening to somebody, I forget, and I learned that during the Vietnam War, people asked Mother Teresa would she march against the war, and she said no, and that threw him off for a curve. No, Mother Teresa, who's so loving, but she did say I'll march for peace. Now, that's very important because it takes away from the judgmental deal. And I didn't grasp it at first. So I began to grasp that and dive into that. And it was explained to me, and then I understood it. If your thought is much more powerful, believe it or not, than your word, because your thought goes out there in the universe and it stays. It does not go away. So if you're against something, believe me, but this is what you got to have to grasp. If you're against something, you are creating that against. If you're against the war, you just think about it for a second. Your energy is going against the war, which means there's going to be a war. However, if your energy can go towards the loving part of for peace, you are increasing the energy of peace. You are increasing the energy. And that's where our thoughts have to begin to turn around. I have a lot of stories. Is 11:30, is it? Yes. Then I'm finished. 10 minutes. I'll tell a couple personal stories which I enjoy, which are fun and hard at the same time. One time, Swami came up to me and he pointed at me and he said, "No ill will." "Me, Swami?" I said to myself. And he turned and walked away. But I learned that, I've been there, this was a few years after being there, that once you catch on, then he'll generally come back and say, oh, when did you come? But this time he did not say. He said, no ill will. And this is the subtleness of understanding those little weeds that we all have. And don't feel bad about them. Just face up to them. What does he say? Face the devil. Where is it? Out there? No, it's inside. Inside. It's that little weed for somehow got in there. Don't worry about that. It's there. So I said, that's not me. But I knew if he said it, that he said it for a reason. Ill will? Me? I never thought I'd want to hurt anybody. Then it came to me when I was in business. I was an automobile dealer, and there was a manager for his region of a certain make of car. And I thought, and I don't know how, I cannot even remember begin, and he disliked our group as a dealer and how we were operating. Maybe, I don't know what it was. I don't even want to gather it. But we had set up to have a big meeting the day after I was to come back from this trip. And then it dawned on me, oh my gosh, I did have ill will. I didn't think I did, but I wanted him to be removed from his position in my subconscious. Knowingly, I didn't say that, but in my subconscious, I got it. That was the weed of ill will. I was in shock because I didn't believe that was really what I wanted. But down deep, I guess the weed was there. So when I got it and I woke up, then I wouldn't sleep and the whole bit. And when I got it, I went to Darshan, and that's exactly what Swami did. He came up and he said, oh, when did you come? So I knew I got the message. And I had a lot of when did you come over the years, so we won't share all of them. But what happened was really fascinating, because when I got back, I knew the problem. And we were supposed to have this big meeting at 8 o'clock. I mean, it was big, all his managers, and we're a small agency. It wasn't big. My managers, we're going to meet and have it all out, whatever it was. So before the meeting started, it was 8 in the morning, I said to him, would you come in my office a minute? He said, sure. So we were standing at the door. I can envision. I says, you know, I want to apologize. He said, I really know that you're doing the best that you know how for your company, and I admire you for that, which is the truth. He was an honest man, and I did. It came out of me in a truthful way. I wasn't putting him on. I meant it, because then I realized what I was doing. Do you know what he did? He started to cry. And you know what we did? We hugged. And you know what we did? We went into the meeting, had a cup of coffee, and everybody went home. That's the power of love. The power of love neutralizes everything. And neither one of us, we still change streetcars, to this day, probably couldn't even sit down, and if we were trying to open an argument what it was all about, we wouldn't have a chance, because it totally got eliminated with the word love. With the word love. Interesting, huh? Interesting love. Two more minutes. I'm trying to pick the right one here. I'll tell you one that we're in Chicago, and I guess we can share that one. Our president is from this area. So in the election, not this one, way back two elections before, when that kind of went in a way that I was not happy with in relationship to how the election and then going to war, which I was totally uncomfortable with in Iraq, didn't make any sense to me. And so I became pretty judgmental. But I knew it. See, there's the difference. I knew it. I was very judgmental on what that administration was doing at that time. And so I asked Swami, I really prayed at him hard. I said, because I knew this had to get canceled out. And this was the moment of the chance to do it. It was a big moment, because I was concentrating so much on the judgmental. I knew that was wrong in how we were going to solve it. But I didn't know how to get over that. So I prayed a lot to Swami. Swami, show me how to get above this thought-provoking way of being judgmental. Because it is terrible. It is the most difficult to overcome. You can smile sweetly, but if you're thinking bad, it's worse. So anyway, this went on a couple years, and the process that Swami used with me was dreams for the cleansing. It's all about purifying the heart is cleansing. You're cleansing, whatever you want to call it. Cleansing. So this went on for years because I kept practicing and trying to find. I knew that, but I had to dive into this one, and I'd get one dream after another. And then the finalization of it, I hope this hits home with you, because it, to me, I can chuckle over it, because again, the big dream, which was dynamic in the morning it came, and he used other people in this dream. And what there was going to be a big rally in Hollywood. You know, Hollywood is the big rally places for a lot of people that want to make a point. So there was two movie stars in this dream, and one was Billy Crystal. And Billy Crystal has been an MC, and he's a good MC, you know. He's played that role very well. So his role in this crowd in this dream was to get this big group of people in a rally against the administration all hyped up. And he really could do that very well. It was a short dream, but just seeing Billy Crystal there in that dream, I knew, you know what it is. You know, he's getting that group all riled up. And then he says, for the main speaker that's coming, that it's the Fonz, Harry Winkler, and he's going to be the main speaker. And so everybody is, oh boy, waiting for the Fonz. He's coming the whole bit, and everybody, and I'm playing it well because the dream did it very well and was short. And so the Fonz come, and everybody's happy and cheering and the whole bit, and they're expecting this big, long harangue about what's going on. And his answer was, and I love him. End of dream. And I love him. This was the rally against the president at that time, forgetting names. And he said, and I love him. Rally was over. The dream was over. And then I knew I got it. When there's instances that still happen, and today, I'm not that pure where I can see the love and everything immediately, but I can now, if something that I'm pretty much unhappy, I'd very much pretty immediately, at least mentally say, and I love him, and I love him. The answer to everything is love. The beginning is love, the answering is love. And I can truly say, I love you all, and I'm very happy that you love me enough to invite me here. And I thank you.